talk some Blazers, maybe a few other issues of the day. He is, again, back where it all began at the Oregonian. You can still find him on Twitter, the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, another week has passed. So how is Team Fentress doing?
Team Fentress is doing very well. Thank you for asking.
One general thought, this NBA bubble concept, eight games, kind of a unique race to the finish line. We're getting day basketball during the regular work week. Some teams, you know, already playing for their playoff lives. But on the whole, I mean, from a unique or entertainment point of view, I'm kind of loving this. How about you?
It's been spectacular. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's my job to watch some of this stuff, but aside from that, it's been interesting because you don't feel like you're at the end of a long season. You feel like you're at the beginning of a short one. And it just, you know, whenever, you know, you can shrink down the sample size, it becomes more intense and more intriguing. And that's what they've been able to do. Now we still, you know, your playoffs pretty much set for almost everybody except for one, you know, basically the West 8 seed, but still people are jockeying for position. I feel like the basketball has been really good, and maybe, you know, Lillard made a comment last week that guys are rested. So it's just been fun to watch. And yeah, like you said, there's games like 4 or 5 games on a day. Like, how do you beat that?
Considering the Trailblazers didn't play yesterday, and as we speak, they're neck and neck with Memphis in front of them, Spurs behind them. I mean, you want to talk about a great day off. Things went pretty well yesterday for the Blazers as spectators, right?
Yeah, definitely. Spurs went down. Kings went down. Was it Kings? Spurs and Kings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Spurs and Kings went down yesterday. I swear, sometimes I'm like trying to remember all these different teams. So many. And then the Kings come out and beat the Pelicans today.
Right.
Right?
No.
Right.
If they have a wish list, everybody's adhering to it.
Right. Because you're more worried about the Pelicans, I think, than the Kings at this point. And Memphis is free-falling. So I think, right, but here's the problem, though. Portland still has that really tough schedule, right? So I still feel like I feel like things are falling in place for them to help make up for the fact that they have a really hard schedule down the stretch. I mean, the next 4 days, they're going to play Denver, the Clippers, and Philly. That's going to be tough. If they win 2 out of 3, that's awesome. I kind of feel like they're going to go 1 and 2. Don't let anyone know I said that. They're not going to be hurt as much because everyone else is sort of falling into place for them in terms of the right teams losing.
Well, by making that commentary on my show, that's the safest place to go to make sure nobody hears it. So you're square. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. As for Tuesday against Houston, you know, the Rockets and the Bucks, I mean, they score 118 a game. They're two highest scoring teams. Portland's been a bottom five defensive team. And then they hold the Rockets to 46 points in the second half. I mean, if there was ever a 2020 is nuts, how about the Blazers winning a big game with their lockdown defense? Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And they're too big. The number inside, I mean, they've missed some easy shots, but just having those two bigs down there, actually three really with Whiteside, they did a good job against a much smaller Houston team. But yeah, no, the defense came to play. They made it difficult for Houston to get a rhythm going. The funny thing is that the whole game I kept waiting for that run. Like I said to my son, I still feel like Houston's got a 10-0 run coming up at some point. And it never happened. It never materialized. Portland always answered any little mini run Houston had with either a basket or a stop. So that's fascinating to see. And then, you know, they did all that with Lillard not scoring until the 4-minute mark of the second quarter. He didn't have a great game. McCollum didn't have all that great of a game. But they balanced that out by shutting down pretty much Westbrook, holding him to 15 points, letting him get rolling. So that was a good win for them. That was a game that I did not think they were going to win. I admit it. But they won it.
You know, that Houston team is kind of bonkers. They took 53 threes. They've led the league in three-point attempts 4 straight years. And by the way, like, easily, I love Westbrook. I mean, he just plays so hard. But a team that just leans so much on that element, kind of a live-by-the-three, die-by-the-three, how legit do you consider a team like that to make a deep playoff run?
Did we see that with the Warriors? I mean, I think it's a little different. I think that team did go inside more often than Houston does and did have some size. They had some rim protectors. They had some guys who could play defense inside. This team is like all three or nothing, it seems like, so it is a little different. And that's where I differ in terms of whether it can be done. I think, you know, the Warriors were the first team really to just launch that many threes and win a title. This team is trying to do it without any interior presence. Their biggest starter is 6'7", Robert Covington. So they're a very little small team. So think about all the rebounds you're giving up. Think about all the, you know, easy baskets you're giving up. They hope they can compensate by turning you over and by making a ton of three-pointers, which the math adds up. If you make a ton of three-pointers, you can make up for a lot of different deficiencies. But, you know, it hasn't worked yet in the Harden era. I'm not sure Westbrook is the guy to get them over the top in that regard. I would like to see them have somebody that's 6'10 running around doing some dirty work inside. So I'm not a Houston believer as far as winning the title.
We talked last week, we hit on Melo and Anthony Simons, but after the Rockets game, you wrote about Gary Trent Jr. You know, they picked him in the second round. He spent his rookie season mostly in the G League. You know, he's a terrific player at Duke. And like you said, with Lillard off for a lot of Tuesday, what about the performance of Trent? Not only in this one, but he plays his you-know-what off on both ends of the court.
Yeah, he's shooting 60% from three-point range so far in the bubble. And, yes, he gets after on defense. Just aggressive, tenacious, doesn't back down on anybody, to anybody. You know, it's wild because, you know, coming into the bubble, I was kind of high on Simons maybe having a bigger impact. But Trent is the one getting it done. He's giving him that guy off the bench who's a D-and-3 guy, a 3-and-D guy, however you want to say it, that they desperately need. He's not the ideal size to play the three, but he can play it. Definitely is a legitimate backup too. So yeah, I mean, without him shooting 60% from 3-point range, I think they're 1-2 right now. Instead, they're 2-1. We'll see if he can keep it going. I mean, you know, that's that's the kind of 3-point percentage that's going to come back down to earth at some point. So, you know, I feel like there's going to be a 1-for-7 game coming up here shortly. The math, you know, just sort of dictates that. But wow, he just looks like he's a player. Like he looks like he's a guy who has the talent on both ends of the court to be here for a long time.
Yeah, hey, he was a McDonald's All-American. A few final thoughts for Mr. Fentress. I saw you were on a podcast with Devin Pouncey and talking about the letter and the demands of the Pac-12 players they submitted to the commissioner. And logic says some of the monetary issues will have to be negotiated. But in general, what do you think about the players like realizing the power in unity and kind of capitalizing on this moment to use their collective voices for not only their own safety, but to make progress?
Yeah, no, I think it's the perfect time, really, because you have the added element of the pandemic, right? So if you're the players who are not being paid beyond the scholarship, we can debate all day long about if that's enough compensation if that's enough of a compensation, which I am on the fence on a little bit, but leaning more toward paying them something extra. The bottom line is the health issue is legit and changes everything. And they're 100% right. They said, look, schools are not wanting to allow students to come back. You know, high schools, some districts are canceling sports until the next calendar year, but you guys are doing everything you can to get us out on the football field. Why? Because there's a ton of money on the table. And do we get any of it? No. And we're the ones at risk of catching COVID. Now, people say, oh, if you're young and healthy, it's not going to do anything to you. Well, you know, the death rate is not remotely high at all, true, but to me, you know, if you're talking about 1,200 football players in the Pac-12, you know, the death rate would be a few are going to die. Like, that's unacceptable. Whether it's a high number or not, a few, three, two, three, whatever. It's not, it's too many. And then also, we don't know the long-term effects of this disease yet. We don't know, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and people are like, hey, if you had COVID 20 years ago, you'd have the lungs of someone who's been smoking for 20 years. We don't know. Like, that's altogether possible. So they have a legitimate, 100% legitimate gripe. But I would say to that, look, if you're that worried about COVID, no amount of money should get you out there to play, period. Like, I would make that argument. Like, are you telling me that you're really that worried about COVID, but they gave you $15,000, you'll go play? That doesn't make any sense. So it's a very delicate topic. that one that I do not see how it's going to come to an amicable resolution anytime soon. So it's going to be very interesting to see if these players who are seriously involved with this are really going to sit out. One more note to that. If I am a NFL draft pick, almost guaranteed to be a top three round pick, I'm probably not playing this year. I see no upside for Penei Sewell, Javon Holland, Jahnai Johnson, Thomas Graham, maybe even Deommodore Lenore to play this season. They're going to get drafted regardless. It's going to be such a crazy season anyway. It may not even end. Like, you can start and never end. And it's not like it's going to be a situation where you're sitting out and no one else is. Like, there's going to be a ton of people sitting out. NFL knows what you're about. They got enough film on you. If you're projected to be that high of a pick, there really is no reason to risk that unless you just really, really want to play. And, you know, I don't think the Ducks are going to win the national title. Sorry, it's not going to happen. You're not going to change your quarterback and full offensive lineman and be a national championship contender. You're just, it's just not going to happen, I don't believe. So you just won a Rose Bowl. You won a conference title. You accomplish about all you're going to accomplish. If you have your draft status locked up, I would say sit. Why risk it?
Yeah, when other people talk about the percentage of those who might get infected, my comeback has been like, well, if I have a son who's playing Division One and he contracts the disease and died, that's 100% of the people I cared about.
Right.
It's exactly. At 1.2%.
Exactly.
I just love seeing these guys have a voice over those who have just ruled with this iron hand forever. But
One quick thing to that.
Go ahead.
Back in the day when coaches made $500,000 a million, like when Bilotti made a million, like I was kind of like, give them a little bit more on the stipend for the scholarship. But I think a scholarship is enough because a scholarship is very, very valuable. Let's not act like a scholarship and the training and the coaching aren't valuable, obviously. But when coaches start making $3, $4, $5, $10 million a year, ADs are making a million, assistant coaches are making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in some conferences. Coordinators are making $3 million. I mean, come on. Now it's just like ridiculous, preposterous money. You have to come up off of something for these athletes, something more than what they're getting.
Yeah, well, Dabo in Clemson makes $9 million. They just finished a $55 million facility upgrade, and they're spending $68 million for a stadium upgrade. It's like boo-hoo-hoo.
Right. And some people say, well, you get access to these facilities. Yeah, for 4 years. It's not like I get to live. If I'm a player, I get to live in the Hatlin Dowlin complex my entire life. Ferrari leather? Like, you know, no. After I'm done with my eligibility, I'm kicked out. So that doesn't mean that doesn't matter to me. Like, there needs to be some type of level of conversation to make up for the basic discrepancy between these coaches becoming multi-millionaires and players leaving with a valuable degree, but that's it.
All right. The last thing is, I threw a poll out there, and it was very, very simple. I said, college football this fall, you get three choices. One, no chance. Two, it's going to start but shut down. Three, it's going to start and finish. They're going to play the games. They're going to have conference championship games, bowl games, and a national champion will be crowned. 7% voted for three. 48% said no chance. 45% said it's going to start and shut down. It's all speculation. In your gut, how do you think it's going to play out?
I think start and shut down. And what I would do, what I would say to all the teams, I'd say, you know what? How you manage this is part of the competition this season. So if you have an outbreak and you have to forfeit games, oh well, everyone else is moving forward. And just literally, if you get to December and there's eight teams, and it doesn't matter what the record is, there's only eight teams standing because they were able to manage COVID, that's your national playoffs right there. Boom. It might be 3-3 Northwestern going up against, 4-1 Oregon. Say Oregon makes it in the final four because those two teams managed COVID. They only played that many games because everyone else around them was forfeiting. And if that's, let those teams keep playing. And then, boom, crown a national title. Okay, a national champion went, 6-3 in the playoffs. And they're national champions because they did not allow COVID to ruin their team. And they won the final game against whomever it was.
All right, so I'm throwing $100 on Temple at 700-1.
That's pretty smart.
All right, folks, he's Aaron Fentress on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress, back in the saddle for the Oregonian. Fun stuff as always. You and your family, be well, be safe. And we'll catch up next week, and who the hell knows where we'll be.
Exactly. All right, man, take care.
Take it easy.